Right. Both counsel are on Zoom, so we see you on video. You can proceed when you're ready, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I represent the petitioner as appellants, James Loomis and Janice Escher. There's no doubt at this time and at the time of the tax court's decision in 2020, which was 8 years after the briefing was completed on the cross-summary judgment motions before the tax court, there has been much litigation involving the so-called derivium matters. And those cases that have been considered with respect to the derivium transactions, similar to the one at issue here, have concluded that for the purposes of tax reporting, the pledging of collateral for purposes of a loan is not, in fact, a loan, but is a sale for tax reporting purposes.
Ms. Taggart, may I ask you a question that's been bothering me in looking at your briefing? Can you answer this question? Does the taxpayer challenge the determination of the tax court that the transaction between the taxpayers and Whitco was a sale of the floating rate notes rather than a loan with the floating rate notes as a security device?
So, Your Honor, at the time of the summary judgment motions,
can you answer that yes or no? Do you challenge that determination by the tax court?
At this time, no.
No. Is that right?
That's right, Your Honor. At this point, with
what do you mean at this point? This is a hearing on your appeal. At this point, it's either yes or no. Are you claiming it was a loan and therefore not a taxable event in 2003? Or do you claim or do you concede to the tax court's finding that it was indeed a sale which was closed as a loan? Which way is it, loan or sale?
We're conceding that it is a sale at
You're
this
conceding
point.
It's a sale, all right? Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. And the reason I was hesitant to answer Your Honor's question in the affirmative is because the record makes it clear that my clients, the appellants, believed it to be a loan at the time of the briefing. However, given all that has happened since that time and the other decisions that have been rendered with respect to the derivium, even though they have facts that are distinguished their particular case from the other derivium cases that have been decided, there's so much water under the bridge that we concede that it is a loan. But that doesn't end.
No, he concedes it's a sale, not a
I'm sorry.
Now, you're confusing me a little bit because you're saying that your client thought it was a loan until he found out that there was a sale of the FRNs by Whitco. Is that so? He went into this deal from 2003 until 2008 thinking it was a loan, and now when he finds that Whitco sold the FRNs, it becomes a sale? Is that your position?
Not quite, Your Honor. The position is that he believed it was a loan at the time it was done. However...
But why does that matter? Why do we care what he thought?
Because intent of the parties is one of the factors that must be considered in the evaluation of the treatment of the issue. But it doesn't really matter at this point.
If it's a sale, it's a sale. It gets treated as a sale. The fact that he may have thought he'd found a clever tax strategy that would benefit him and he was wrong doesn't change the fact that it was a sale and for tax purposes gets treated as a sale. And you're not contesting that it was a sale. So I'm not sure what's left about this.
Well, it doesn't resolve the issue because...
Sure it does. It's a sale. Treat it as such. You're now trying to claim that you can pull out another argument and say he was defrauded, which I find... sort of hypothetical at best, but so what? If he's got a claim for fraud, his claim is against the people who defrauded him, not against the U.S. government. U.S. government didn't defraud him. He owes the taxes.
Except if the if the transaction is indeed a sale, if you consider the fact that he purchased the ferns only for the purposes of providing it as collateral for a loan, then his election for qualified replacement property was defective. The case of
that's his problem. That's not the U.S. government's problem. It's not the IRS's problem. You seem to be saying, gee, I've got this aggressive tax strategy, and I believe it's going to save me a bundle. And if it doesn't, I should still save a bundle because somehow I've been defrauded and didn't get the tax strategy success I expected. It just doesn't work that way.
I appreciate Your Honor's comments. However, if the sale was part of a transaction, that's a singular transaction, and it wasn't.
He sold the company to the employees. And then he decided to take the proceeds and put it someplace else. But the sale of the company took place. And his attempt to put off taxes didn't succeed because it wasn't really a loan.
As Your Honor says, the sale to the ESOP should have been, if the sale by WITCO and the sale of the FRN was not a sale but a loan, then the transaction where he purchased qualified replacement property failed, and the gain should have been realized when he sold the Loomis stock to the ESOP, and that's when the gain would have been recognized.
But he filed a 1042 election, did he not?
He attempted a
1042. No, he didn't attempt to. He filed a 1042 election in 2002.
Correct.
Then in March of 2003, he went to Morgan Stanley and bought the FRNs. Then later in March, he made a deal with WITCO, which was a loan. You tell me now that you don't dispute that it really wasn't a loan, that it was a sale. So in 2003, there was a taxable transaction, to wit, a sale of the FRNs to WITCO. End of story, right?
The record makes clear, presented by Mr. Loomis's affidavit and Exhibit 6 to the Declaration of Parent presented by the Commissioner, that Loomis appellants only purchased the FRNs for purposes of completing the transaction with WITCO that we are conceding as a sale. But you must consider the transaction as a singular transaction under the STEP doctrine. The STEP transaction doctrine embodies substance over the principles, and it treats a series of formally separate steps as a single transaction if the steps are in substance integrated, interdependent, and focused toward a particular result. The presentation from the derivium parties that was presented by the commissioner in the declaration of parent, as well as Mr. Loomis's affidavit, make clear that it was intended to be a singular transaction.
It was intended to accomplish a tax strategy where he'd save a bunch of money, but it didn't work, and you now concede it didn't work. And I'm mystified as to why you think you can say, well, but I should still, because I wanted to save a bunch of money, I should still be able to save a bunch of money, so I'm going to reform all of my filings in a way that lets me save a bunch of money. What authority says it works that way? Because it doesn't.
The estate of clause makes clear, which is it's instructive, where the election failed with respect to the 1042 election, that the...
Why did it fail?
Right, they found that the gain should have been paid at the time of the initial acquisition and sale to the initial sale to the ESOP and the prior tax year.
Your client chose not to have it recognized by filing a 1042, right? He chose not to have it recognized. He filed a 1042. He said, don't recognize it in 2002. I've got a year to replace it with qualified property. And he did that. Now, I could understand if you were arguing it wasn't really a sale, it was a loan. The only problem with that is, why didn't your client pay interest from 2007 on? You claim that was because he learned that the FRNs had been sold. But the agreement that he had with WITCO specifically provided that WITCO could sell the FRNs and had to replace them at time of repayment of the loan. So that argument doesn't hold any water at all. So what is your argument?
That if it is a sale, then the transaction needs to be considered a singular transaction under the STEP doctrine, and the election as a QRP fails, and the gain should have been recognized in 2002. Alternatively, if it should have been recognized at the time that he discovered the fraudulent transaction, that is WICO sold. And
why do you say it was fraudulent? Your man agreed in writing that WICO could sell the FRNs. What's the fraud?
The fraud is he was not aware.
Oh, he wasn't aware because he didn't read the document? Is that the idea?
He wasn't aware that they were actually sold and that he was...
Well, when he signed the documents, they weren't sold. He signed documents permitting them to sell. And it's not being defrauded if you sign something that authorizes WITCO to sell them. And my goodness, they sold them. That's not fraud. The only fraud here is that the tax fraud, which your client was hoping to benefit from, didn't take place. That's not fraud. I mean, your brief repeatedly says it's conceded, it's undisputed. There was fraud. I don't see it.
Yes, Your Honor, my time is more than up.
Yes, my colleague's questions took you over time, but thank you very much for your argument this morning.
Thank you.
Let's give Mr. Schuman a chance.
Well, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Schuman, and I represent the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. The central question in this appeal, as the court has recognized here, is whether taxpayers can continue to defer recognition of a capital gain from their sale of stock under Internal Revenue Code Section 1042 after they've disposed of the qualified replacement.
Mr. Schuman, you've heard your opponent concede that point. Is there anything else you would like to say to us?
No, Your Honor, except that the Stolberger case of this court in 2012 is very similar and stands as a very strong precedent for on that issue as well.
Counsel, the fraudulent conversion argument, that was never raised before the tax court. Am I correct in that portion of the record?
That's correct, Your Honor. And not only that, they did not claim a theft loss when they filed their tax return for 2002 or 2003, and they never amended these returns to do so later. And you're right, they certainly did not advance this claim in the tax court in their petition, and they did not argue in their summary judgment papers that they were entitled to a theft loss deduction under Internal Revenue Code Section 163C3. So they have entirely waived that. And in any event, as the court has noted, the record is established that taxpayers' disposition of this replacement property, the FRNs, it was a sale and not a fraudulent conversion. The master agreement clearly gave WITCO the right to sell the replacement property without the consent of the taxpayers, and that's what they did. So it's as if taxpayers had sold their car for cash to a third-party buyer and signed over the title, and then they called the police and said, hey, this person drove off with my car. Well, the buyer had every right to do that. The police aren't arresting anyone. The buyer has title and every right to possession, and it's the same situation here. And as the court has noted, taxpayers may have had some kind of claim against Derivium or WITCO for bad advice, since these transactions were a sham, and they could not result in the indefinite deferral of gain. But that is of no consequence in this lawsuit between taxpayer and the government. Taxpayers also assert that there are some procedural irregularities that require reversal of the tax court's decision, but there are none. The tax court's delay in ruling on the summary judgment motions was not ideal, but it caused no prejudice to taxpayers, and they do not even assert that they were harmed in any way by this delay. The evidence supporting the tax court's decision has always been part of the record below, and it was available to the court and to the parties during the summary judgment proceedings. The tax court clerk's office merely uploaded these exhibits fairly recently so that they will be available to this court in the resolution of this appeal. There's nothing improper in the handling of these exhibits, and in any case, there's no prejudice to the taxpayers here. I think we've already discussed the taxpayer's other argument that this was a defective deferral of gain because they never owned the replacement property. That's just not true. There are several flaws with that argument, as the court has already noted. But it, I would note that the timeline of this was that the taxpayers purchased the replacement property on February 28, 2003, and they held it until March 25, 2003. That's about 3.5 weeks. Only then did they authorize their financial institution to transfer it to Whitco. So they own the property, and that's clear. And as noted, when the taxpayers filed a joint return for 2002, in which they submitted an election under Section 1042 to defer recognition of their gains, they're bound by that election, and there is no basis for them to attack their own election. They made their bed, in essence, and now they have to lie on it. Unless there are any further questions from the court.
No, we don't have any further questions.
Thank you. And for the reasons we've discussed today, and based on the arguments in our answering brief, I ask that the court affirm the decision of the tax court. Thank you.
Thank you very much, both sides, for your argument. We appreciate it. The matter is submitted.